Your guide to Merseyside sport. The Kickoff.
Radio City Talk.
Let's catch up with Ian Herbert from the Daily Mail. Morning to you, Ian.
Hi, Steve.
Thank you for your company. Right, let's just reflect quickly on something that seems a long time ago, but it was only a few weeks back, and that's England's incredible result in the Under-17 World Cup. And, of course, Rhian Brewster very much hit the headlines. You know, great young striker for Liverpool. Yeah. But what about the men behind it and the coaches behind it? Because you wrote a fascinating piece about Steve Cooper and his involvement in that win.
Yeah, I mean, I think, as you say, Brewster, phenomenal. And I think it just demonstrates to you, you know, if players get the chance, you know, how fearless they can be, really. But I mean, I think there was a Liverpool, another Liverpool connection, which was Steve Cooper, because Cooper was a coach at the academy in the Rafa Benitez days, and he left the club when Brendan Rodgers came in. I mean, I was just speaking quite a lot, I suppose, to parents around of the players in that team, and some of the representatives of the players in that team, and just a real feeling that Cooper was just a really top coach, not only, I suppose, tactically and technically, but also just the way he handled, you know, that group of young men, the way that he sort of gave them a fair bit of freedom when they were out in India to sort of, you know, have a good time and enjoy themselves, which England teams don't often do at World Cups, and yet to have a kind of a sort of a discipline there as well. It never strikes me as a very easy balance to strike that, but really impressive and an important part of the Liverpool setup for quite a long time.
So someone that Liverpool shouldn't have let go, or was it his own desire to make headways in a different direction?
You very much got the impression that he didn't want to go, and he was devastated to have left Liverpool, having done a lot of work building up the academy, getting it accredited, really getting it past past those who monitor and decide what ranking an academy should be. But I think I think Brendan Rodgers brought in Alex Inglethorpe as part of that setup, and then other people, I suppose, leave as part of it. But the thing that struck a chord, I think, for me, was just that way that we do sort of throw coaches out somehow, in the ever ebbing tide of Premier League football, especially Premier League clubs. You know, new people come in, old ones come out, and they're almost on the scrap heap, really. And I think if you speak to a lot of people around Liverpool from that time, that they'd have an awful lot of time for Cooper. The other thing I felt about the whole business was that there was something to say about the FA, really, and about the fact that the FA have given Cooper his chance. The FA have given Southgate his chance, and they've had an awful lot of success out at all age levels. And indeed, the women's team under Mark Sampson have done very well. And I think the kind of the issues that we've seen at the FA around governance have slightly obscured the fact that that two of the people who've sort of been really kind of attacked a lot and have done stuff that might not be right, Dan Ashworth and Mark Sampson, have both contributed to England's success. I sometimes think there's a more complex story there than just the one about governance, which we've heard an awful lot about.
Sometimes when these managers move on, it can be the making or the breaking of them. As you mentioned, Steve Cooper there as well. I think Mike Marsh, of course, part of Brendan Rodgers' backroom staff. He was involved as well, wasn't he, in the England Under-17 setup?
And I thought Marsh seemed to be going, I mean, you're much closer to it than me, but I sort of felt that Marsh had gone at a time when Rodgers' results hadn't quite, you know, they'd started to sort of dip, and there was almost a need for change, just that people could see that something was being done, really, and Marsh seemed to be a casualty of that.
Yeah, just looking at other managers, I don't know how I link that through to sort of Everton's situation and their managerial chase at the moment for Marco Silva, but he's barely been in a job for 5 minutes at Watford and already being touted as the greatest thing about.
Yeah, I mean, I suppose the odds are so great these days in terms of, you know, clubs not being able to afford to take the drop, that they just go for whoever they think, you know, they're looking for a lifeline, aren't they, really, in some respects? And, you know, Silva doesn't seem to have been around 2 minutes. I covered Watford's home game with Arsenal. That's the only time I've seen him this season. for the Mail, and I thought he was a very impressive character. Thought Arsenal were very unlucky to lose the game, but he clearly was very impressive and very articulate. But I think we know that the £10 million is what Everton have put on the table to try and prize Silver away. But if you think about the cost of relegation would be something like £100 million. So, you know, that's how much a club would lose in terms of TV money if they do drop. So you can see why Watford, you know, who wouldn't want to be in a relegation scrap themselves, would think, well, 10 million is just a tenth of what we think the value might be.
So the compensation packages that clubs are offering for the managers now are completely inadequate, are they? I mean, Watford paid 10 million for Tom Cleverley.
Yeah, totally. I mean, utterly. £10 million is a crazy sum of money if you think about it, in terms of the sorts of sums that are going out for players. And the economies of football have changed so much that, you know, 10 million is like 10 quid to me or you. You know, if you've got that kind of, if the TV deal across the Premier League is worth 5.1 billion, then 10 million is just nothing really, is it? And indeed, you know, you pay the kind of money that clubs will pay players in wages, you know, 200 grand a week or whatever. Well, that's just one player, but you've got to argue that the manager's the most important part of that, you know, of the matrix, really. So you just got a feel, haven't you, that unless Silva really wanted to leave Watford for Everton, that there's no way. There's just no way they're going to get him, is there, really?
No, it's always bemused me that those compensation packages are low. And the other financial thing that I've always found strange is that keepers cost a lot less than everyone else in the team. And yet, you know, you think a goalkeeper would be a relatively important part of your squad, wouldn't you?
And they're really always going to play 70% of the games at least, aren't they? So, yeah.
Makes no sense. Will they get him in the end, you think, Ian? Marco Silva?
I can't see them getting him this season. I cannot see that unless he was really to want to leave. And I think in terms of, I mean, I suppose it depends on him as an individual. He's obviously a very confident individual. Mm. But unless he were really willing to put himself out there. I mean, I think if a Spurs or a, you know, or an Arsenal or a, you know, a top six team were to come in, then that might be different. But I mean, you know, does he really want to stake his reputation on what will be a fight? Having said that, I mean, I think I'm astonished, as I'm sure you are, by what's happened at Everton. I mean, I think they're the shock of the first quarter of the Premier League season. I remember doing Ronald Koeman's press conference after they'd signed Gylfi Sigurdsson, and it just seemed such a positive environment in such a positive place. It was a great signing, but they've got great players, I think, but I can't see why on earth Silva would want to really fight to leave Watford for Everton, however attractive the money might be.
Well, let's go back to our initial conversation about youth, and Everton have had to rely on a bit of youth this season in Dominic Calvert-Lewin. So we can talk about young players and where they do get their chances within first-team environments. And if you look at Liverpool, maybe Ben Woodburn isn't getting a whole load of football at the moment. There's other young names there. But for Everton, they've had to basically give a lot of opportunity to a few youngsters. Dominic Calvert-Lewin is probably central to all that. Is it too soon for a Calvert-Lewin to be having so much game time? Is it not ideal for an Everton? Or the other side of that, you know, he's lauded by a lot of fans, and will he come good?
Well, I don't think it is too early. I think where it could be dangerous is if a player is, you know, is in a side who are really struggling, and there's a negative sort of atmosphere around a club, as there inevitably will if a club is struggling, and he's kind of overexposed. But you know, and really being asked to sort of deal with something psychologically that he's not up to at that age. But I don't see that that's been a problem. And I think it just takes a bit of bravery in a manager to actually give young players a chance. But I think we underestimate what they're capable of, really. I think there is that constant wish to go to Europe, to buy, you know, to other countries, to buy a sort of a £5 million fullback or a £6 million midfielder, because, you know, that is sort of seen to be what you do. But I think we've seen across England and in Everton, you know, this season, you know, you know, believe in these young players, and we've not been believing in them enough, I don't think.
No, it's tougher when you're younger, though, and put in that environment, isn't it, in a team that is struggling. So your Adam Ola Luckmans, Mason Holgate, your Tom Davies, yeah. John Joe Kenny, there's lots of them getting a bit of, getting game time, getting opportunity, but if the environment around you is tougher in terms of the pressure on you, it's not exactly ideal.
No, it can go two ways, but I mean, I was always struck by something Michael Owen once said about his early days at Liverpool, you know, and about the fact that that is the only, you know, when he was scoring goals in those early days, you know, he just didn't think about it. You know, he didn't, not only was there not doubt, but you know, there wasn't even much, there was no complexity going on in his brain, really, when he was kind of running in on something or running through on goal. He just believed, you know, in the way that we do believe when we're young, and, you know, your mind's not clouded with doubt, you know, so... I think it can go a couple of ways, can't it, with you know, with young players, and that's what makes them so interesting. And you know, there was lots of doubts about whether Southgate should have fielded some of these young players in the last two international games, but they've been extraordinarily good, haven't they? So it can cut a couple of ways, I reckon. But certainly you don't want to expose someone to, you know, a really profoundly negative environment if defeats are bringing post-mortems and, you know, major scrutiny in the media and negativity, but I don't think that's the case in point here.
Across the park. So what happens with the Ryan Brewster? When does he finally get his chance in the first team?
Well, I think, you know, I don't know. I would have thought you might get, you know, intermittent chances this season to come through and prove things.
If they were still in the League Cup, that might have been an opportunity.
Exactly, yeah, but you know, you just don't, you never really know, do you, when, you know, the, you know, injuries might occur. You might get a chance to come on for 20 minutes here and there, and that's when you take your chances. That's what young England, young Liverpool players down the years would have said, you know, Stevie Gerrard and Jamie Carragher amongst them. So you'd hope that he's going to get a chance this season, do you?
Oh, well yeah. I'd hope, but I can't see it somehow. I mean, there's a number of young players I think Liverpool fans would like to see a bit more of. Harry Wilson hasn't made his breakthrough. Ben Woodburn, yeah. We've seen glimpses of. But of course, there's too much attacking talent there already, isn't
yeah,
there, going forward?
Yeah.
So, I don't know, question mark. Just a quickie on your book, in contention to win the William Hill Sports Book of the Year. So your Bob Paisley book, Quiet Genius. You must have been delighted with the reception it's had this year.
Yeah, no, well, thanks. And it, a great hour were you talking about it, you know, right back at the start when we published it. So, yeah, I just think, you know, we're sort of a quarter way through a season and there's a lot more noise, isn't there? There's a lot more people shouting about themselves in management. And I think perhaps people, you know, responded to the fact that quiet blokes can be, you know, can do really well by listening to other people around them. But that's all what we were trying to get across with the Paisley book. But, it's been great to, we had a great evening at Waterstones in Liverpool not long after I was on the show, and the response from, well, not just from Liverpool fans, but Everton fans as well, you know, Liverpool people to the memories of those days has been fantastic. So I must thank them.
No, I certainly hope you win it. It deserves to win it. It's called Quiet Genius, Bob Paisley, British football's greatest manager, and it would make a marvellous Christmas present. Ian, thanks very much for your time
thanks,
this morning.
Steve. Great to be on. Cheers.
Your guide to Merseyside sport. The Kickoff.
Radio City Talk.